With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/decide. That's linkedin.com/decide. Terms and conditions apply.
Yeah. We welcome in our good friend. He is a Hall of Famer. He is the general. He is brought to you by hornsolutions.net. He is John McClain. John, how are you today?
I'm great. Is today your birthday?
Today is my birthday.
Happy birthday.
Thank you, buddy.
Hey, Sean. Good job.
Thanks.
Good job not dying.
I just saw Amy's tweet to you.
Thank you.
So happy birthday.
Thank you, John. I appreciate that.
Seth, you did a great job last night. That's a hard job you have to do.
It is, man.
Especially interviewing Ronald McDonald. What time did you get home?
Serious journalism, John. What time did I get home? Well, like Ronald and I went out partying afterwards.
What time?
Ronald and I closed down the bar.
Yeah. Did Ronald make it rain?
We went across the street to the salt grass.
What time did
Ronald's like, don't take any pictures of me. I can't be seen at other restaurants.
What do they call the Long Island iced tea there? The Texas tea. That was my first experience with Long Island iced tea, John. Was at Saltgrass with Garrett Heinrich the other day. And I had a couple Long Island iced teas, walked out into the sunlight, and was like, what the hell am I going to do now?
Strong.
Yeah. So thank you, though. Ronald McDonald, John, I'm going to tell you, I was interviewing him, and I completely seized up because you think of like, oh, yeah, this is it. This is real. I'm interviewing a clown. And he goes off, and he was like, eloquent.
Oh, he's practically got a British accent. Funny you should ask me, Seth. I prefer the Big Mac. I love the 2 for $5 combo meal we have going on right now at McDonald's.
I had a great time last night. I tell you.
You did well, too, John, by the way.
Thank you. Steve McKinney. I want to tell this story. After Steve McKinney retired, Steve had various businesses, health clubs, and one time Mark Berman at Fox, his photographer, was going through a line at McDonald's, and Steve took his order. And so his photographer tells Berman, my God, Steve McKinney must have lost everything. Why? He's working at a McDonald's. He just served me. Turned out when you own a McDonald's, you have to do everything. And Steve was doing everything. And he was there last night with his son Hunter. And Steve has 16 McDonald's now.
16?
With more on the way. Congratulations to Steve McKinney.
It's a real true American success story that he built himself up from being a lowly line worker like that. He had lost everything. That's the news I'm breaking this morning. He actually had lost everything. He was making minimum wage.
Right.
No, he had not.
There were so many great things about last night. And the one that blew me away was Jerry Jones. I like to get there early. I bring the members of the posse with me. And we go up into the VIP room and start eating and drinking. And they had big screens up there where you could see everything on the red carpet. And somebody goes, well, there's Jerry Jones. And I'm looking around for Jerry with security because every time I see Jerry, whether it's the combine, the league meetings, he's always got people around him. He didn't have anybody. And he was walking the red carpet doing all the interviews. And
Patty Smith was his security last night.
And when he came upstairs, I went and got him and took him through the VIP area and introduced him to people. People wanted their pictures made with him. And there was these two really beautiful women asking for to pose for a picture. And he had his arm around him. He said, hold on, John, get in this picture. I said, no, Jerry, they don't care about me. John, get in this picture. And I said, oh, yeah, okay, let me get in this picture.
That's crazy.
So he couldn't pose for pictures with any women without a guy in there. So I was happy to do it. And he treated everybody great, made a tremendous speech. I noticed Janice McNair getting teary-eyed as Jerry talked about Bob. And it was an honor to introduce the McNair video and Jerry Jones to – he just was tremendous, and I texted a couple of his people up with the Cowboys, and they said, well, let me know how he does, and I did, and I said he did a great job, and people were really happy with it. And Patty Smith and Janice Burke, head of the Sports Authority, they just do a tremendous job. Patty does all that hard work every year. She outdoes herself. I send her. I'm a head of selection committee. We're always kicking around ideas. And I sent three last night. Her text was something like asking me to do is asking me to think about next year on the night we just finished this one's asking a woman she's ready to have another baby the night she gives birth.
Yeah.
Wait till tomorrow.
Yeah, exactly.
But Patty did a fabulous job, and it's just a tremendous evening. I don't know anybody that didn't have a lot of fun. It was great seeing so many people.
Yeah, it was funny, you know, because we get guests on the show. I did the show with Clint yesterday, John.
And the most handsome guy to ever play quarterback for the Cowboys.
Do you agree with that assessment from Jerry
Jones? I'm trying to think. Eddie LeBaron, Craig Morton, Don Meredith, Roger Staubach.
They weren't part of the Jerry Jones era.
Oh, since Jerry came since with Jerry, Troy, yeah. Yes. Trying to think. Let's see. Quincy Carter, was he a handsome man? Yes, Clint by far. Yeah, Best-looking quarterback of the Jerry Jones era.
What was funny is, you know, we get the list of people who are going to be at the Houston Sports Awards, the celebrities who are going to be there. And we work with the folks like Patty behind the scenes to go, okay, can we get them on the show? Can we get them on the show? Some can, some can't. Some aren't getting there in time, whatever the case may be. Jerry Jones is on the list, and we asked, can we get Jerry Jones on the show? And it was very clear, oh, yeah, Jerry wants to talk to everybody. And that was really cool. Yeah, he did. He was great.
It was so funny to see a lot of people. When we got upstairs in the VIP area, Robert Reed was up there, and I had seen Robert in forever. And I don't know what it is about NBA players. They always look so good long after their careers are over. Him and Big Shot Bob and LaJuan and Drexler would have been there, but David Stern's funeral was the same day. So yep. A lot of people, I'm sure Barkley would have been there for Rudy T, and a lot of them had to be in New York representing the Rockets. And Jim Crane, I wish Bregman could have been there. And I thought it was great Altuve showed up and accepted the Moment of the Year award, and then Jim Crane and Altuve came up for Bregman. I thought Crane was tremendous.
Yeah, he was great.
He couldn't have been better. Jim Crane has really stepped up. You know, you haven't seen Jim doing a lot of interviews. It's always Hinch, every once in a while Luno. But since the scandal, you know, he had that news conference. I thought he did a tremendous job last night. He did a tremendous job. He's hitting this thing head on, and he talked about what would happen at spring training. So, Crane deserves a lot of praise for stepping up and handling the situation with the media a lot better than anyone else.
Yeah, you know, what's interesting about Crane is that he'll cite his business experience from time to time. Remember when they were talking about getting the CSN deal done, and he said, hey, I'm in the overnight business, we'll get it done quick, and then, yeah. But in this instance, you can see where, oh, okay, well, you don't have a GM, you don't have a team president really right now, right?
His son is the team president.
No, that's not. They hired his son and brought him in at the same time that Reed Ryan left. So the PR statement was a little confusing.
Well, they introduced him as the team
he
president.
He did? Okay,
last
all right,
night.
I apologize. Yeah, yeah. I had a conversation with somebody I misunderstood then. Okay, so, but they've kind of like, he's had to take over. So kind of like in business where you might be all of a sudden have to take over a company that you just acquired.
Right.
And you got to step in and do it. He's just kind of doing that.
No doubt.
Like stepping in as the CEO, and he's doing things that he probably doesn't like doing, but he has to do it, and he has to be out front. And I thought, he's done a great job
of it. That's what a good boss does, steps up at times of trouble.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. So we were talking about this, Sean. We'll get to the Texans in a little bit, but as long as you bring up Jim Crane, what's your excitement level for the 2020 season? Are you a little more amped up than you would? I know you're a baseball fan. Are you a little more amped up than you'd normally be because of the Astros, kind of the us against the world kind of thing?
I'm going to spring training again, and I can't wait. I'm going to do it. The NFL meetings are in Palm Beach in March, and I'm going to go to several times of spring training before that. And I am, because I'd love to see the Astros. Something that bothers me, I listen to national, read national media, and I don't see many of them pointing out that they were exonerated for this season and this past season, and they still got to the seventh game of the World Series, or that they, I think this is right, I saw two of their main players hit better at home than on the road in 17, and I'm not condoning what they did, but they act like that's the only reason they won is because they cheated.
Yeah.
When the fact is, they have a lot of talent, and they still have a lot of talent. And I hear people, oh, the A's are going to beat them. The A's are going to win the division. I heard Buster Olney on ESPN say yesterday that he thought pitchers would throw at him. And I'm thinking, now, that'd be great. Go ahead, because the umps are going to tell him, don't you throw at these guys. If you do, you're out. And then if you hit them, they're on base. But I think that if you're going to throw at an Astro, you better make sure your house is totally clean, because if it's not,
yeah,
and it comes out and this wet investigation is widespread, you better be very careful what you say and what you do, just in case it doesn't come back and bite you in the butt.
That's a really good point. It's funny, I had someone ask me on Twitter, Sean, what's the over-under for the number of bench-clearing brawls the Astros are going to be involved in next year?
Give me a break.
And I said, I don't know. You know, I said 2.5. You know, I feel like maybe one more than normal. And, you know, the bench is clear a couple times. Yeah, I said 2.5. And everybody, of course, on Twitter is, oh, no, way over. Like, they're going to go in. I think what you're alluding to, John, they're going to go into these games this year. They're going to be set warnings going into these, especially the Astro A's games.
On both teams.
Like, they're going to go in with a level of warning that's above and beyond.
Well, the whole reason we're at where we're at is because the old, at least partly perhaps, is that the old school self-policing isn't done anymore. It has to be done by the book because you're not allowed to have bench-clearing brawls. They call a bench. These days, when people leave the dugouts, it's reported as a bench-clearing brawl.
Yeah.
Like, without a single punch thrown.
Right.
So it's not going to happen. Chris Archer's out trying to act like a badass on social media. Chris Archer ain't doing nothing to nobody.
A bench-clearing brawl was Kansas and Kansas State last night.
Man.
That was a bench-clearing
that
brawl.
Was a bench-clearing. Until
somebody picks up a chair.
You know that idiot? It was a stool.
Or a trash can.
And
Sousa.
He was trying to hit somebody, and somebody, coach, knocked it out of his hands. Otherwise, that moron would have hit somebody, and he would have been suspended, I'm sure, for
maybe
the rest of his career.
Maybe the rest of his career. That's right.
And but the thing about the Astros, they're still loaded. Like Altuve had a terrible start last year. If he has a bad start this year, everybody's going to say, oh, it's because he's not cheating.
Of course.
And they've been exonerated for last season. The electrical devices, they were exonerated on that as well. So people can say anything they want. What I would love to go is on the road with them.
Yeah.
And hear how bad the abuse is, sit down low, and they better have thick skin, and they better play well, and they better win. Somebody asked me over under on 90 wins, and I said over because this team is still loaded.
Yeah, it's still a good
one
team.
One of our listeners pointed this out to me on Twitter this morning. I hadn't thought of it, but Bregman notoriously always has these slow starts.
Yeah.
And he's going to have a slow start. If he has a slow start this year, it's going to be people saying, oh, you see, he doesn't have the tub thumping anymore, even though that ended in 2018.
And if there's any player on the Astros whose tears that other opposing fans are going to want to dance around in, it's Alex Bregman.
Yeah.
Above and beyond Altuve, Springer, anybody
else. And if they start fast, hey, man, they're cheating again.
Yeah, right. No, they're, it's a no-win situation.
I love the thing, and I didn't know this since I've talked about it, and I thought I'd. The shot heard around the world, Bobby Thompson's home run to beat the Dodgers for the Giants in 51, the most famous call in sports history. Turned out they had a telescope set up in the center field fence, and they were stealing signs, and they were waving a white flag. And since it was over the pitcher's shoulder, you could see it at the last instant. And they would wave that flag, you know, once or twice. And of course, Bobby Thompson claims it didn't help him hit the shot heard around the world. But cheating is the second oldest profession, and I'm not condoning it, but it's been going on forever. It's not like the Astros are the first team to do it illegally.
Mm-hmm. John McClain with us for his weekly visit. All right, we have a lot of Texan stuff to dig into with John McClain. So let's bump this into the next thing. We've got a new defensive coordinator. There have been changes over there on Kirby. Do we expect more changes to come? We're going to level set and lay out everything with John McClain coming up next. John McClain in studio with us, brought to you by hornsolutions.net. He is the general. So, John, interesting week over at NRG Stadium. You had alluded to the changes that would be coming, and I think well, let's start with Chris Olsen, who is out as senior VP of football administration. What is this, in your mind, a precursor to? Is this a precursor to a general manager coming in? Is it a precursor to a new cap person coming in? What do we read into this move?
First, let me say for the 1,000th time, no matter what they do, Bill O'Brien will have the power. They could bring in a general manager, and Bill O'Brien's going to have the power.
It'd be
like it is in Oakland, Seattle, Kansas City, New Orleans. All those teams have general managers, and the coaches have final say on personnel. That's the way it will always be as long as O'Brien is here. I don't think it means they're bringing in a general manager. General managers don't negotiate contracts. They have people under them who negotiate contracts. And They've got a guy, Kevin Krakovic, his last name, and he's done it there every year with Chris Olsen. That was the only move that surprised me. Chris Olsen's regarded as one of the best in the NFL at handling a salary cap and negotiating contracts. And so he's out, and I would guess that he'd bring somebody else in because this is probably the biggest offseason they've ever had. I think that Watson will be the second highest paid player in NFL history compared to Patrick Mahomes. And I think Tunsil will be the highest paid offensive lineman, trying to sign Zach Cunningham to an extension. They got 19 unrestricted free agents. Obviously, not all of them be out there. And plus, they're going to be kind of active in free agency if they don't use all their money re-signing players and signing those others to extensions. So that was one that surprised me.
I guess I know it doesn't mean that they're signing a general manager, but isn't it conceivable that it could be clearing the way to say whether it was hypothetically Nick Caseri or maybe somebody else that Bill O'Brien has his eye on that, all right, you come in here and then you can bring your own cap guy or contract negotiator or what have you?
As long as people understand Bill's running the show.
Right,
and,
right.
But and how many GM? Caserio, his contract's up in May. So unless you give compensation to the Patriots, maybe that still doesn't work. But I don't believe Caserio's coming here as GM. Maybe in May, because he's tight with O'Brien and Easterby, he comes at like executive VP of football ops, something like that, give him that kind of title. But he knew last year when he wanted to come as GM, Bill was going to have final say on personnel.
Right, which I guess is like, that's why I guess I don't see that as being an impediment. If that was going to be the situation last year, then why all of a sudden would he not come here because he's not going to have total power?
It wouldn't be, but he can't get out of his contract till May. And you got to have somebody who's going to be doing all these deals.
Oh, gotcha.
So they got to bring in somebody. And maybe they're going to give up their second round pick this year for Caserio.
Oh, God,
which wouldn't
not.
That be unbelievable?
That would be terrible. But
I don't see it happening. I think they'll hire somebody else. I think it's somebody Jack Easterby has worked with. Jack is the assistant GM without the title. O'Brien's the GM without the title. That's the way they operate. Easterby does a lot of the GM duties for O'Brien because Bill doesn't have time to look over budgets and contracts and health and all those things, rehab and strength and conditioning and all that. So Easterby does it for him. And but that finding somebody replace Chris Olsen is going to be a really, really big move for this organization when you've had somebody that's one of the best for 13 years.
John, I heard you yesterday on with the guys on In the Loop when you were doing the leg hiking segment, and they asked you about Caserio, and I know it's one of these things, you got to say yes or you got to say no, and you seem to be on the side that you think Caserio, it sounds like you think Caserio still is coming here.
I think it's a possibility because his contract's up, every other position's been filled.
Why would he come here?
Because he's really tight with O'Brien and Easterby.
So, but to work with his buddies, that would be the thing?
I guess, because they've convinced him they got a good thing going here, and he'd be part of it, and he could help him go to the Super Bowl. But on the other hand, maybe he'll go somewhere else. But the GM jobs where you're in charge have filled by the time your contract's up.
Well, and the league seems to be changing, too, right? I mean, this structure, I'm not saying everybody's going with the same structure as the Texans, where it's, you know, they kind of stumbled into this thing. But there does seem to be a shift in how much power coaches are getting now. Like, could we see a day where the conventional general manager coach structure that we've seen for so many years is actually the exception rather than the rule?
Maybe. I mean, the only one of the ones I've mentioned, Gruden Super Bowl, Carroll Super Bowl, Peyton Super Bowl, Belichick, of course, Super Bowl.
And O'Brien.
Andy Reid's been to a Super Bowl. This is his second. He's yet to win one. And then there's O'Brien and some of these newer coaches. Like Cleveland doesn't have a GM, and Kevin Stefanski's there. I can't imagine they gave him control over personnel. Washington doesn't have a general manager, and who did they hire?
They hired Ron Rivera.
So Ron Rivera, I'm told, has been given control of personnel.
He made a Super Bowl.
Matt Rhule has a guy there who's been working there forever. My mind's gone blank, and a former sports writer. And so Marty Herney, and but a guy going into the NFL from college, I can't imagine he would want control over personnel right off the bat. So more and more doing that, just depending on how bad they want you. And, of course, We all know Mike McCarthy will not have control.
That's right.
I think the biggest thing, if you look at those guys, all those guys that have control, and it's funny because Andy Reid, when he first got to Kansas City, didn't have control, and he was talking. He wouldn't shut up about how much he loved not having control because he didn't have to worry about it. And then, bam.
Dorsey, gone.
2 years, yeah. Gone. I've got control. Yeah. I think that the whole thing about being both the GM and the head coach is it's almost – none of it has to do with intelligence. It's all about discipline and self-control and wisdom. You know, there's a difference between intelligence and wisdom. Mm-hmm. Wisdom involves a certain amount of restraint and self-knowledge. And the hardest thing for a coach to do is to tell himself no, to be able to say, well, I'm not going to sacrifice the future for the current. And Belichick does a masterful job of that. I guess we're still waiting to see, because if it involves patience, we don't know until a couple years have passed how good is Bill O'Brien at telling himself no.
Yeah.
So far, he's gotten really aggressive at trying to fix a couple problems real quickly with a lot of draft future assets. Now we see, okay, what do you do? What do you do without all those assets?
Those other general managers, the other teams that have GMs, the coaches just worry about personnel. They don't worry about the big GM picture. One of the things about Brian Gain, he didn't like doing all those other things. He wanted to just do personnel. And if you got a GM, or in this case, you got Jack Easterby, who's assistant GM, Bill O'Brien can focus on personnel, and if he wants something done in another area, he can ask Easterby what he thinks about it and then report back, and Bill makes a decision, and then he runs it by Cal McNair, and Cal signs off on everything O'Brien and Easterby want to do. So I can't wait to see what happens with Caserio. Still don't understand why he wanted out last year, and if it was because but he didn't re-sign. You know, he and their personnel expert, Monty Osenford, who was here for a while, he's very highly thought of. I saw a guy in their organization, a new one that's highly thought of. Don't know if his contract's running out, but a lot of people think that if Brady leaves, that ship is going down, and I can't wait to see how things turn without Brady, if indeed he goes.
John McClain in studio with us, brought to you by HornSolutions.net. John, let's shift gears over to Romeo Crennel and Anthony Weaver. First, do we expect Romeo Crennel to be back in some capacity?
Yeah, I think Romeo will be like it was in 2017. He'll be a sounding board for Weaver the way he was with Vrabel. Weaver, it's one of those deals, if you don't promote him, you're going to lose him. Anthony is very highly thought of as a prospect to be a coordinator. He's been overseeing the pass rush as well as the defensive line, and he's ready to get his chance and make the calls, and having Romeo there to bounce things off of is great for him. And everybody knew it was coming, and it's not surprising at all.
You know, and I think we've had this conversation about, okay, is the defensive personnel going to change in terms of how it looks on the field? Because the Texans have had all these guys, these DJ Reader, Angelo Blackson, Brandon Dunn types, big, stocky guys. And until they brought in Charles Omenihu this year, J.J. Watt was kind of the only hybrid player they had. I think that Weaver had something to do with Omenihu being here. I think you look at Weaver.
I don't know. He might have.
Yeah, I think he did.
Sure, he signed off on it.
Right. So I think that there's probably going to be a more dynamic look to the defense. I think Weaver's input is going to be more about finding guys like Omenihu.
Yeah.
That it's not – you can't just be – sometimes Romeo Crennel, I think, is focused still on – a version of football that doesn't exist anymore.
Yeah.
Of like having big beef eaters up front that can stuff the run, but not necessarily do a whole lot of other stuff. It's hard to be like that anymore in the NFL, and I think maybe Weaver understands that a bit more.
And they didn't even do that this season. The run defense from the midway point on was awful, and they better target the defense. You know, last year they targeted the offense. Offense still needs tweaking, but the defense, the pass rush has got to improve. And then, of course, the coverage. They could lose Bradley Roby. Jay Joe said he still wants to play. I don't know what they think about him. His playing time was diminished. You know, they played Gary Conley and Vernon Hargraves and Kepelani Johnson and Jay Joe on the bench. And so they need people, I'm guessing, at corner. And then, of course, they need better pass rushers. So they've got to target the defense the way they did the offense last offseason.
What's your sense on Roby? Whether or not he'll be back, John.
Last year, I thought boosting Tyrann Mathieu's salary from $7 to $11 million. Boy, that's a good deal. They're going to get him back. KC gave him 14, and he's earned it. He had a great season, the best he's had since 2015, and now he's in the Super Bowl. So I don't know. I don't think that Roby was as good at corner as Matthews was at safety. And I don't know if seeing what Matthew did would make them want to pay more for Roby. I'm guessing Roby's gone. I think he's going to be 27 or 28, which is still young, and somebody with a lot of cap money, and there are teams with obscene amounts of cap money, would pay Roby more than the Texans will budget for him.
Well, that's what I wonder, because last year he reportedly gotten a three-year deal for $30 million, I believe, an offer. And Roby bet on himself, kind of like Tyrann Mathieu, and said, oh, I'm going to take the one-year deal and see if I can get better. I wonder if he's going to get better than that this year. And because I think a lot of the same questions and knocks on him will remain. Is, okay, is he consistent? Is he going to be able to stay healthy after this year? All of that. And maybe the Texans, after having 1 year with him, feel like, okay, you are worth that 3 years, $30 million.
Maybe.
So I'd like to see Roby here. I think Roby's going to have to, like, John, do you think Roby would stay even if he understood that there's a good chance he'll end up being the third cornerback?
I'm guessing he's going where the money is, and it doesn't matter. What did Kareem get from Denver last year? Was it 23 guaranteed?
I don't know. I think it was 20. It was 3 years, $33 million.
And so he's not going to get less than that. Yeah. And it's so funny when you look back at that Kansas City game. Two of the things they wanted to do was shut down the running backs. They did a great job. And to keep Tyreek Hill from beating them, did a great job. And they only gave up 51 points.
Yeah.
And Roby had a lot to do with that with Hill. So he had a great game against Hill last year at Denver. So people see that and they go, yeah, he was hurt for, what did he miss, three, four, five games, something like that. But I think because corners are in such short supply, he can run, he can tackle, he can play inside or outside. I think we're going to look at his contract like we did Tyrann Mathieu and go, wow.
I think he's just one of I know he was banged up this year, Bradley Roby, with the hamstring. He's one of the few guys on this defense that has – some really elite or near elite traits. You know,
he does, and if you're going to overpay for somebody you know, somebody who's in your system, somebody you've seen behind the scenes, know that how they deal with coaches, how they are off the field. Bill O'Brien's big deal is team guy. So maybe they overpay for Roby.
Final segment with John McClain.
Hey, John, it's Sean's birthday. I think you said happy birthday when
he first came in.
Yeah, because you reminded me that it was his birthday. And Sean's lovely fiance, Amy Zahn, tweeted a photo collage of Sean Pendergast. And everybody, go to – I'm going to retweet this. Go to my Twitter account or Amy Zahn.
You just did.
There's a picture of you when you're in about fourth grade or so, I guess.
That's probably second grade, maybe.
Boy, you had that
classic –
It
looks like high school.
Yeah. You had that classic 1980s – schoolboy haircut where it was like straight across the middle, puffed up like crazy. Yeah. What the hell were we? I had the exact same haircut. It looks like
it's boxed off. It's a square.
It's like a box around
your
face.
It looks like Legos.
Hair all down over your ears and everything.
Yeah, like helmet head.
That was. I can remember that being so uncomfortable. Like I was hot all the time. It was like I was wearing a hair winter hat.
Well,
it was like, what the hell?
Yeah, and you go to the barber and they're cutting straight across your forehead.
Yeah,
like a straight line. Yeah, not good.
It was a miserable time.
John, you want to see
y'all
it?
Y'all were children. And
I showed him.
You showed John?
Y'all were children, and I've been covering the Oilers 7 years.
I know.
You're
Wrangling. I'm old.
Wrangling, single. Back in the day when being a newspaper writer was like, you were like Ron Burgundy of the print world, right?
Yeah, not exactly.
Were those crazy times, Sean?
Crazy? Depends on what you call crazy. Crazy was before I got here. When guys partied every night, went out after games, drank like crazy.
Back before Bolivian exports got more expensive.
Strip clubs. First time I was at the Chronicle in 76, guys took me across the street to a strip club about 2 in the morning. And we went in there, and they knew everybody.
Yeah.
And they're not that club was not like our clubs today, I'm told.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
I wouldn't know personally,
they
of course.
They weren't policed as heavily, I suppose.
Yeah, well, they weren't the same kind of babes either. Yeah.
Now, really? Oh, okay.
Now they just dress up in costumes at games and make up stupid nicknames for the
I was just stunned that it was just such an accepted deal. No big deal at all.
John, we got a text here, and we'll get into some more of I want to get your thoughts, obviously, on the upcoming Super
Just
Bowl matchup.
Just dawned on me. I'm in my 45th year now.
Yeah. Wow. You're kicking, man. You're still doing it.
I'm sorry. Text message?
Text message. This leads into a couple other follow-ups, but the text message is Jonathan Joseph coach material? It would be great to see him transition to
being
a secondary.
Yes, he's coach material. He's front office material, player relations material. I believe when his career is over, whenever it is, he'll be working
president.
With the Texans.
Yeah.
Well, and I wonder if he says he wants to play. The problem with Jonathan Joseph is the same as all older players. It's that, yeah, when he's completely healthy, he can still do good things for you. It's just that you can't depend on guys in their mid-30s to remain completely healthy.
Right,
so they have to that's just one of those decisions that I'll be surprised if he's on the roster next year.
Same here.
Not 100% totally and completely surprised, but I just kind of assume this will probably be it for him.
He didn't play any snaps in the playoff game against Kansas City, and he was dressed for the game. Do you expect to see any more promotions from within for some of these vacant positions?
I don't know. I don't know. It's hard to get rid of personnel people right now because of the draft. This is their time of the year. They're all at the Senior Bowl right now. Their contracts expire after the draft, so I would expect changes in personnel after the draft. But they could move some people up in personnel and in the coaching and on the coaching staff.
Yeah, I guess maybe I should have been more specific. There's an outside linebackers coach vacancy. There's obviously a defensive line coach vacancy with Weaver getting promoted. Could you see any of the younger coaches on the staff, maybe one of the players on the staff getting promoted into one of those positions?
Could. I don't know who. Matt O'Connell is a defensive assistant. I know they're really high on him. I don't know if he would coach a position or be in a position assistant coach. But I think more changes are coming, and we'll know this week.
Yeah, and some of those guys to watch. You know, I think TJ Yates is full bore into coaching, I think. And
yes.
I could see him wanting to be a coordinator someday, wanting to be a head coach. And he has that persona. You know how I feel about backup quarterbacks. I feel like they're the smartest guys in football sometimes because they've had to be in multiple systems. A lot – backup quarterbacks, usually guys that last a while, have had more experience with more different schemes than – like most offensive coordinators. So it's really, I think there's something to him. The fact that he's coaching an offensive line. I think Cushing, I know because people keep asking about Cushing as a linebackers coach. I think Cushing likes what he's doing right now. I think Cushing gets to do what he loves doing, which is help out with the linebackers, work out, you know, and be a weight room coach and everything, but not necessarily have to work 19-hour days and be away from his family and everything. So I'd be surprised if that's a move. So I think it'll be somebody else.
Yeah. John, you have tweeted throughout these changes that it seems like after any sort of move, the Olsen move, Weaver, and so forth, you on Twitter, and I don't blame you for doing this, but remind the audience, as you did at the very outset of your appearance with us here today, that it is O'Brien and Easterby's show. They're running this thing. And one of the things I saw you tweet this weekend is they are constructing this team from the personnel side in the form of what their vision is. What exactly is their vision?
Yeah, I don't have a clue. Easterby came from the Patriots, and so I'm sure he wants it to be like the Patriots. One of the things I liked about O'Brien when he came here, he didn't try to do it just the Patriot way. Like so many coaches there who fail, they think that's the only way. And Bill, who worked under George O'Leary, under Ralph Friedgen, said he learned a lot from Bill Belichick, but he learned a lot from them too. Now, Easterby is more about the Patriot paranoia. And so that's the way it's become over there. And they have their vision of what it takes to win, and they are in total charge. And they can't blame anybody else when it doesn't work. And, you know, the team thing, I look at what Bill always talks about, the team thing. He's a great team guy. And I should have thought more about it at the time. When O'Brien has talked for the longest time, he talks about the group, the consensus. Well, the consensus is his vote. But he always said Jack Easterby, Matt Bazergan, and Chris Olsen. And the last time he did that twice, it dawned on me he didn't mention Chris Olsen.
Yep.
So Chris Olsen was on the outs with O'Brien since late in the season for whatever reason. Otherwise, he would have mentioned him in there. And those two, they're large and in charge. And if it works, they'll be at the top. They'll be at the head of it. And if it doesn't work, they'll get the blame.
I love now that O'Brien has established this, like, omission, damnation by omission. Now, whenever he mentions lists of people ever again.
Oh, yeah.
Not only
I'm looking for random pronouns,
looking for omissions, but I feel like even like around the office or whatnot, he might compliment a few of the cafeteria workers, but he's going to leave one out,
right?
And she's going to be like, "Oh boy,
this one's sitting over there holding prongs over the chicken breast, like, oh no, oh no."
I just want to tell everybody lunch was great today. The hot bar, the cold bar, and meanwhile, the dessert person's over there like, "Oh crap, I got to get my resume in order.
What did I do? What did I do?" John, are we ever going to hear from Jack Easterby?
I don't know. He talked probably if the Texans go to the Super Bowl, because when he was in New England,
the real foxhole guy.
when I heard his name, I went back in Google and read everything I could. He's a great talker. He said great things when they were in the Super Bowl, and he talked to their website one time and was really good. I put in requests before the season, during the season, but he hasn't talked. At some point, maybe he will. When I see him at the league meetings in March, I'm going to go up to him and see if I can get an interview, and he can turn me down in person.
I like the whole, I kind of get this Clemson vibe of him where, you know, you use religion and the teachings of the Lord to dominate and crush your opponent. I like that. I like that whole philosophy. I like that feel, like, you know, that's what the New Testament's all about, yeah. Baby. Dominating your foe.
Yeah, I'm sure there's a book in there somewhere.
Hold him down and hold a loogie over his
Ecclesiastes.
Face.
John, this is before we get to the Super Bowl, J.J. Watt is going to be on Saturday Night Live. Are you going to DVR that?
Yeah, he's
Are you going to be at the Super Bowl?
No.
Okay.
And he'll be right the week before RuPaul. Too bad they don't have him on together.
That would be awesome.
And I think that's great for J.J. I'm sure he'll do a really good job. They've had a lot of athletes. I think Peyton Manning's probably been the best they've ever had.
Yeah.
Because Peyton's just so good in any situation. And I'm happy for JJ, because if he's doing it, maybe that's something he's liked, would want to do ever since he was. Maybe he watched it growing up. I don't know. We'll talk. We won't be able to talk to him till training camp.
Yeah.
And so I will DVR it so I can watch it. But I was kind of surprised. I think now he'll spend more time in Chicago, because he's got his place in Milwaukee, outside Milwaukee, and. It's easy to get Chicago to watch soccer games.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. So, John, the Chiefs and the 49ers are our Super Bowl matchup. And there's some Texans storylines with this, you know.
Lots of them.
Yeah. What's your favorite one? Kyle Shanahan?
Well, Kyle, and he's got 7 former Texans assistants on his staff. He's got some people in other departments on the staff from the Texans, and it's like they're all from the Gary Kubiak era when Kyle was here, except Wes Welker, who went last year to be their receivers coach. The Texans liked him a lot, but they didn't have a position for him to coach. He was the assistant. So Shanahan reached out, and now Wes Welker's going back to the Super Bowl. But I'll say this, Kyle's 40 years old. You know, by the time he's Andy Reid's age, he may have been to multiple Super Bowls, may have won multiple Super Bowls. Andy Reid, who doesn't like Andy? Everybody likes Andy Reid. He's in his 60s. He's been to one, lost by 3 to the Patriots. I would love to see Andy Reid win a Super Bowl. And, of course, Patrick Mahomes may be in multiples, but everybody loves Patrick Mahomes. He's going to be the highest-paid player in NFL history, well-deserved. So my personal feeling is I don't want one team to win more than the other, and I'll be happy for both.
You know, I was at you brought up Andy Reid. I was at Supercuts. No, Sport Clips. I was at Sport Clips yesterday getting my hair cut.
Yeah.
And because they had
the
TV on. Well, thank you. Yeah. I appreciate it. I remember I was going to try to grow it out for a while.
Yeah.
It lasted an hour. It's number 2 on the sides right now,
right,
baby.
Right. No cornrows for you.
But they were debating on ESPN. It was Marcus Spears and Kellerman talking about who's got more pressure on him. And it was Pat Mahomes versus, I guess, San Francisco's defense. And Spears was saying it was Pat Mahomes, and what he didn't bring up, which I kept thinking, like, okay, if I were in Marcus Spears' position, what I would say is this. The most pressure on Pat Mahomes, if I'm Pat Mahomes, is thinking about Andy Reid's playoff failures, and that however many chances he has left at it, it's going to be with me. And man, I would feel like a personal responsibility to get Andy Reid a Super Bowl. Now, and Pat Mahomes, he's youthful. He's probably thinking, oh, of course, we'll be in championship games every single year for the next 10 years. That's just the way it works.
Right.
It's the folly of youth. But yeah, I'm with you, John. I feel like this is Andy Reid's greatness as a coach has been weirdly somehow a little bit underappreciated, and it's more because he hasn't had a guy like Pat Mahomes yet. This is like the perfect blend of these two.
I think this will be the first of multiple Super Bowls they get to as the Patriots wind down. And Andy's a really good coach. They have the fastest offense in the NFL. He's in charge of personnel. He's a good personnel man. And Mahomes has counted for 9 touchdowns in 2 playoff games, including 8 passes. And I think it's going to be so much fun watching this. And I saw ESPN a really stupid survey, like, who does this mean more to, Kyle Shanahan or Andy Reid? I'm thinking, give me a break. Of course it means more to Reid. And it would be great if he finally wins one.
I don't know. John, do you think Kyle Shanahan carries that Super Bowl around from a couple years ago when his play calling directly led to an historic comeback by the Patriots?
Everybody's giving him a hard time about it, but at his age, 40, in his third year as a head coach, I think he'll probably think that he'll have more chances where Reid doesn't know. And, yeah, they blew that game and here to the Patriots, which was an unbelievable comeback. And I'm sure he'd like to exercise that demon. Still blows me away that they were 4-12, like the Rams were in 99, and then they come back and go to the Super Bowl.
John, you know the crazy thing? You mentioned how, you know, Kyle Shanahan's 40. And I think people would probably kind of surprised when they hear that because they think of him and Matt LaFleur and a lot of these other coaches as young guys.
Yeah.
Sean McVay even is into his –
he's in his mid-30s.
Mid-30s. Yeah. Right, but – he's 40. These coaches take better care of themselves than they used to.
They do.
It feels like when I used to look at a 40-year-old football coach, it looked like he might as well have been a chain smoker that was out in the bars all night. They looked haggard and pale and ashen and everything. Are these guys just taking better care of themselves, John?
They do.
Yeah.
Most of them, you know, you don't see many that look like Andy Reid now who are young. And I think if you're young, you better be in good shape because the owner's thinking about you in front of a group, in front of fans, sponsors, media, imagining how you look up there and what kind of credibility you have. And I talked to Gary Kubiak last week for a column I did on Shanahan and LaFleur, and Matt got his start under Gary, and Matt's the one that recommended Robert Saleh to Shanahan, who recommended him to Kubiak. And now it's so funny to remember Robert as a defensive quality control coach. LaFleur was offensive quality, and after every game, the media would be waiting outside the dressing room. Robert Saleh would be the first guy to come out. He'd come out, he'd look left, he'd look right, nobody'd speak to him, and he'd leave after every single game. And now I see him on the sideline for all their games, everybody talking about him being a head coach.
Yeah, it's crazy. John, before we cut you loose, the Titans obviously losing to the Chiefs this past weekend. It was a nice run for the Titans, mostly on the back of Derrick Henry. What do you think happens with Derrick Henry this offseason?
I think he'll re-sign with the Titans. If he doesn't, they'll franchise him. I think Ryan Tannehill will re-sign with the Titans. I'm writing a thing today on Texas Sports Nation. Should the Texans be favored to win the division for the fifth time in 6 years, or will it be like last year? People went with the Colts. Will they go with the Titans next year? Titans D.C., Dean Pease retired at 70. I wonder if Mike Vrabel called Romeo Crennel.
Oh, that's interesting. I hadn't thought about that. Maybe Derrick Henry will retire before the season like Andrew Luck did last year.
Wouldn't that be good for the rest of the
season? That would be great, yeah. John, what's going on in the Chronicle this
week? Aaron Wilson and I got all kinds of stories. We continue to write every day for the Chronicle and Texas Sports Nation, and we appreciate people listening. Oh, one of the things I did two podcast, one podcast about Bob McNair, two stories I've never written about Bob that I thought people would be interested in. That's on our podcast, and we'll keep doing podcasts, Facebook Lives, and I'll have mailbags every week. Thank you guys very much. Happy birthday, Sean. Seth, great job last night, and your hair now, you're a handsome man.
It looks good, doesn't it?
It does. Look very good.
Yeah,
neatly trimmed. Thank you, guys.
John, thank you.
Second trim, what?
appreciate the birthday wishes. John McClain joins us each and every Wednesday in the 8 o'clock hour, brought to you by hornsolutions.net.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you.
I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.